Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. Thank you, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It's a pleasure to be here, folks. It really is. And I want to say again, it's a pleasure to see that 2016 will finally be out of here. It has taken so many lives. It's just unprecedented. I think it's historic. This is one of the most historic times that so many lives have been taken in 1 year. And I'm not just talking about celebrities. I'm talking about just plain old average, ordinary people. And it's a year that you're glad to see over. You're not necessarily wanting to see another year older, another birthday if you're my age, but you know, it's just a year that you want to see gone. Okay, in a couple of days, but after this show is over, we won't be back on the air until 2017, period. Okay, so you kind of want to see this year over. I know a lot of my friends on Facebook and other social media that they say to some of them say the same thing. They want to see this year out of here. It's just it's been totally a bummer year. You know, not just in celebrity deaths, but in just general, people dying in general, you know. And a lot of people have had a lot of hard times and things haven't gone right and things have mucked all up. And, you know, they just want to see, we want to see 2016 gone. It can't end fast enough for some of us. All right, you been listening to George Wilder Jr. We've just come on the air, actually, and basically we want to say happy 2016. Somehow I can't get 2016 off my lips, but anyway, happy 2017. Okay. And author Annette Munich would be on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to have news and commentary. We're going to cover what we can, folks. Hopefully, we'll get it right this time. Like I said before, after today's show, we will not be back until Monday, the day after Sunday, which is New Year's Day. I'm thinking that we're going to be off on the 2nd of January. Are we? I mean, we were off on the 26th of December. Yeah, I'm thinking we're going to be off the day after New Year's Day to celebrate the weekend of it. All right. Like I said before, happy 2017, everybody. Author Annette Munich will be on the show. Hopefully, maybe, you know, we'll see where that goes. Happy holidays, everyone, from the George Wilder Jr. Show. Have a safe and wonderful 2017. That's all it's about, having a safe and wonderful 2017. And always listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show for great guests, great talk, super entertainment. It's all here on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we are internet, online, podcast, radio, whatever you want to call it. We're all over the world. I get guests and calls from all over the world, and that's very exciting. That keeps me here. And I have this little saying, and that is, I've learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. All right, that's a little nugget from the George Wilder Jr. Show. Also, my ebook, this is the last day. Now, tomorrow is the last day. Yeah, tomorrow. Yeah, the 30th. Tomorrow is the last day for my ebook, and it's a novel. I usually do short stories, but this is a novel. It's called Despicable Kill. It's not as nasty as it sounds, believe me, but it's a good read. It's a good write. I had fun with it. This is the last day. Pardon me, tomorrow is the last day that you will be able to get the book on Amazon completely free. Even if you don't have Amazon Unlimited, the book is totally free. You download it on your device, it's totally free, you know, and it's entertainment, it's fun. I wouldn't take any of it too serious, but it'll keep you turning the pages. You know, keep you interested. It's called Despicable Kill. And I changed the name. The original name for the novel was actually Landlady from Hell. But I had a few problems with it. So I had to, you know, redo it, re-edit it, and republish it. And I gave it a different name, Despicable Kill. For the first 5 or 10 pages, it has nothing to do with a kill. But as you progress into the story, it gets you realize why I gave it the title of Despicable Kill. So pick that up by the end of tomorrow, Friday, December 30th. It's going to be free. It's all free, folks. You don't have to pay for it or anything. I'm just giving things away. Yeah, and it's a good read. After tomorrow, the 30th, the 31st, it'll go back to being the original price of $4.99, which is not bad, I don't think, for a novel anyway, not bad. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Have a safe and wonderful 2017. Let's move on to what's in the news and what we can talk about here today. Okay, the number one thing that's on some people's mind is Obama said he was going to retaliate against the Russians for interfering in American politics. There's insurmountable evidence that this has taken place. And I believe it too, because I mean, you can't ever forget that video of a Trump rally a few months ago telling Russia right on American television all over the world to hack America, an American's email account, Hillary Clinton's, to be precise. That was a hell of a statement, and he meant it. He meant every goddamn word of it. He's trying to say it after it's been Everybody got pissed off of it, and there was so much backlash on this. He's backing off and saying that it was totally sarcasm. That was no joke. He meant that. That was not to be funny. He meant it. And the Russians, they did it. They did emphatically interfere with the American election, presidential election. There's no doubt about it. It happened. It totally happened. So Obama said he was going to slap some, he was going to retaliate, and somehow he has. He has slapped sanctions on Russia. He's expelled 35 diplomats. And Russia says that they are going to retaliate. President Barack Obama has imposed sanctions on Russian officials and intelligence services in retaliation for Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election by hacking American political sites and email accounts. The Department of the State Department has also kicked out 35 Russian diplomats from its embassy in Washington and consulate in San Francisco, giving them and their families 72 hours to leave America. The diplomats were declared for acting in a manner inconsistent with their diplomatic status. In other words, they were probably involved. They were probably in on it, in on hacking Americans and their accounts. And the State Department and the CIA and all of these folks, all of these agencies, governmental agencies, confirm that Russia meddled in the American election. And for Donald Trump to say that they're crazy, that this did not happen, he's crazy. You know, he's crazy. But, you know, this sounds like some serious stuff. This sounds like it's some serious enchilada here. Okay? And I have to give Obama his kudos. I have been critical of Obama. A lot of us have. You know, but this is something that he probably got right. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Russians are the reason to why we have Donald Trump as presidential elect. I'm not going to say that, you know, but I will say this is a good thing. And I do believe wholeheartedly that the Russians had something to do with hacking the election. There's too much evidence. There is surmountable evidence to the fact. And for Donald Trump to turn his back on this, I just don't understand it. You know, I mean, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Once Donald Trump takes office in January, you know, Donald Trump can throw all of this out. He can rewrite this. He can, every executive power that Obama has implemented, Trump can just undo it. Anything that Obama can do, that Obama has done or can do, Trump can undo it as president of the United States. He has that power. He can undo these sanctions that Obama has put on the Russians for hacking the election. But if Trump undo this, it would tell us that he actually is in bed with the Russians. It will tell us that. It will tell us that, you know, he's in bed with the Russians, as we all thought from the beginning. But hey, that's remained to be seen. Right now, the Russians are paying a big price for their meddling in the American election. And this time, Obama, I give you a high five on that one. But still in all, that's not going to say that I'm all in for Obama. I am not, because there's some things he could have done, especially for African Americans, that he has not done. There's some things he could have not done that he should have done. And he wants 4 more years. And he's saying that, you know, if he can get 4 more years in office, that he can really get some things done. God damn it, you couldn't get things done in 8 years. Why would we want to give you 4 more? There's no doubt about it. If Hillary Clinton had won this election, it would have been a third term Obama. There's no doubt about it. Obama would have been back and forth to the White House. You know, his legacies would have been preserved. Donald Trump can undo every legacy that Obama thinks he has. So getting back, I'm going to say high five to Obama for this. You know, and Russia, they say they're going to retaliate. With what? How? More hacking? We just have to wait and see. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm all over the place. Facebook, Amazon, you know, and we're going to have some new stuff. I'm going to have some new stuff that I'm going to publish on Amazon next year, which is 2017. So you guys look out for that. More short stories, more novels. I just love to write. I just think it's beautiful. I love interviewing authors because I love hearing their take on how they come to their ideas on writing and how they come to what direction they come on their craft, if I can put it that way. All righty, Despicable Kill. Don't forget, it's going to be free until tomorrow night. Pick it up, folks. No money, no nothing. I have discovered that Americans, maybe people around the world, just ordinary people, they like things for free. I mean, if you give something away for free, I mean, these people are all over it. I mean, I give away free books. People download this stuff in droves. But if I put a price on it, you know, I might not get that many, but, you know, people are still come by, and if they like what you're doing, they're going to, you know, purchase it. But that's one of the reasons why I do giveaways of my material, because I want more and more and more and more people to read what I write, not necessarily to know that there's a George Wilder Jr. out there, but to give people something great and good and wonderful to read. You know, especially the readers out there. We have a lot of people who aren't readers. And I'm hoping that by giving my books and stories and essays away for free, that more people will become to love reading, because reading is paramount. And, you know, no matter if it's fiction, nonfiction, or, you know, whatever, you know, I want to make sure that more people are reading, and I write the kind of stories that I love, and I get an enjoyment out of what I do. And that resonates within the pages of what I write. So, you know, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the writing. I enjoy that the people are reading what I write. And I enjoy knowing that there's folks out there who are just waiting for the next book, the next story, or the next short story, or the next essay, or the next post that I do. I get off on that, and I think that's great. And that keeps me going. That keeps me going, that people are out there reading something that I've written. That's a great thing. And they're enjoying it. And they're, you know, giving me all kind of feedback. I wish they would give more reviews, but they're giving me all kinds of feedback. And that's another thing. A lot of the people who download ebooks in general, I mean, you can have 2,000 people downloading an ebook or more. Not one of those people will give a review. They may love the book, but it's just something about giving a review. It's almost like getting people out to vote. Some will vote, some won't. Some will give it a review, and most will not. And just because a book hasn't gotten a review, but there's been thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have downloaded and read that book and enjoyed it, just because you don't see a review on that book, it doesn't mean that nobody's reading it, okay? You know, because I check the ratings, I check the sales data on my books, my writings almost every day. And I see that people are downloading, people are reading it, people are responding. Some people may give a review. Most are not, even if you say give a review. But you don't want to press nobody in giving you a review, because if you press people, if you bother people into giving you a review, they'll give you a review, all right, one or two stars. So you don't want to press anybody. You just ask them maybe once, you know, for a review. And if nothing happens, you just leave them alone. Then you go ask the next person. And that's how you get reviews. You have to ask people. You know, you have to, people ask me for reviews all the time. Sometimes I give them, sometimes I refuse. It depends on the material that they're asking me to review. I can't review every book out there, and I will not review every book out there. Some things I'm not going to review a book or a story or something out there that I'm not interested in. And it has to be something interesting for me in order for me to review it. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It's 6:21 straight up, 6:21 p.m. in the city of Chicago. I hope it's great where you are. I know it's an hour or 2 hours, whether late or early where you are. And in some cases, it's dark in Chicago, but it might be sunshiny in Timbuktu. Who knows? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is author Annette Munich on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. Thank you. Stay with me. Happy New Year, everybody. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. A winter storm is cooking up in the Northeast. Snow, rain, and ice. 14 million people, winter advisory. But we're not getting any of that over here. I'm not in the Midwest that I know of, but I do know that here in Chicago, they're talking about 47 degrees on New Year's Day. So we're not getting that. I'm pretty sure we will be, because it's winter, right? It's winter, so it's coming, but we're not in the shape that the Northeast is in. So we should be lucky for that. We should be lucky that we're not in the shape that they're in. All right, we're going to have to pray for those people, because, you know, when you are in these winter storms, these storms are nothing to play with. You have to heed what your weather service is telling you. Okay, I just got through talking about Obama strikes back, Russia payback for interfering with the American election. And Trump is lukewarm on that. But I have to give Obama high fives for that. So I had to mention that a second time, because I think this may play a part in his legacy. Will Trump undo this? We don't know. We don't know. But if he does, it will tell us more about his intentions as president of the United States. All right. Amazon. I mean, I buy a lot of stuff from Amazon. I mean, I'm an Amazon shopper, especially online, folks. I do this online a lot. Amazon is starting up something called a fly warehouse. Whereas when you order something on Amazon, you will get it in minutes, not days, not weeks, minutes. So that's something I'm going to have to dig into a little further, because that sounds a little bit unreal. Obviously, if you're going to be getting something in minutes, I don't know. Maybe they're talking about sending a droid or something over. I've heard that mentioned quite a bit, droids. So that's possible. But in minutes, you know, because Amazon is everywhere. Amazon is, you know, in every community, every town, every state, they might be around the corner from you. Who knows? In order for them to get packages to you in minutes. But that's interesting. Also, you know, packages are being stolen. I mean, entire trucks are being ripped off. FedEx, UPS trucks, Amazon trucks, these package delivery trucks are being stolen right from under the driver's noses. I mean, this is serious stuff, folks. In Chicago, it was reported that a 15-year-old boy stole a delivery truck with a bunch of packages in it. And they caught him. They caught this dude. 15-year-old kid alone by himself. You know, I don't understand it. I mean, the 15-year-old, there are some parenting issues there. You know, I mean, you got a lot of rotten parents, you know. I mean, some of the parents are in gangs themselves, you know, some of them are, you know, whatever. I mean, to have a 15-year-old thug out there, you know, it's just pitiful. 15, 16, 17-year-old thugs. It's mind-boggling. But anyway, Amazon says that they're going to get your packages to you in minutes. Technology. What can you say about technology? It's always something with technology. And that's got to be great, because like I said before, folks, I order a lot of stuff from Amazon. Amazon. Oh, I'm telling you what I eat, right? I order a lot of things from Amazon, you know. Amazon should be paying me as much as crap that I buy from them. Okay. Oh, yeah. I mean, in 2016, I've just got through saying a lot of people have perished in 2016, not just celebrities, but people in general. We will be talking about Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher a little later on in the show, but I want to say something about the police. You know, police are under attack. They have been under attack in 2016. I mean, I think there's been more ambushes of our police officers at any time in any year than it has been in 2016. Officers are being gunned down. You know, I mean, they are. I remember at one time I wanted to be a police officer. And my grandmother was, she said, no, please don't do that. And this was decades ago, right? And she was right. They were being gunned down then, but not as much as they are now. You know, I mean, they will get a 911 call and saying that domestic disturbance or something's going on. The police get there. They find out that they have been lured into an ambush and they're gunned down. I have been totally, totally critical of the police on this show, especially the Chicago police on this show, almost every night that I'm on. However, I do not wish any police officer to be ambushed and gunned down while on a call. I'm not for that. I'm not for killing of police officers. No. No, 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 no. This is not the George Wilder Jr. way. Police officers are servants. They're out there to protect us. But I do get in their asses when it comes to crime on the west and south sides of the city, which I do not think the police are patrolling enough. They're not being proactive enough to bring down some of the crime or all of the crime that occur in these areas. I've said this yesterday on the show. New York, Los Angeles, these are two larger cities. These cities are bigger. And both of these states combined have a lower crime rate than Chicago. Now, there is something wrong there. I've heard the talk. Well, they have stricter gun laws than Illinois does or Chicago does. Folks, no one in the world have stricter gun laws than Chicago. No state, no city has strict. You can't even get a BB gun in the city of Chicago. No one has stricter gun laws in the city of Chicago than Chicago. So that's a bunch of garbage. I don't buy it, and I hope other Illinoisans and Chicagoans figure it out real soon, because that's a bunch of malarkey. And a lot of people around Illinois, they have to realize that some of these politicians, if not all of them, you can't believe everything that comes out of their fucking mouths. You can't believe a lot of things that they say. A lot of these people say what they want you to hear. They don't tell you what you need to hear. So you have to take it with a grain of salt. In some cases, you may even have to do your own little investigation. Because so much bull will come out of their mouths. It's pathetic. There are so many things that politicians try not to tell us, try not to let us know things that we should know, or try to swindle us or bamboozle the people who voted for them. These things happen. So, like you say, there's fake news going around. There's fake politicians throwing out fake rhetoric and expect you to eat it up. Not here on a George Wilder Jr. show. We're going to get to it, and we are going to expose it. No, so you can't really believe everything you hear or everything that you read. And I tell my kids, my son, every damn day, Do not believe everything you hear. Just because you hear it on the news, you see it on the internet, you pick up a magazine, it's in a magazine, it doesn't mean that it's true. I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm saying to do further research on it. It's news in one area, and it's if it's true, it's going to be in four or five different other outlets also. You know, it's going to be able to be proven. You know, so don't get hoodwinked by this crap. All right. I want to say this again. I am not against. I am totally against. Let me put it this way. I'm totally against killing of police officers. And 2016 has been a dire year for that kind of thing. Ambushing officers. I think that's just cowardly. I think that's just pathetic. You don't do that. You don't gun down. You don't call officer and he responds, or he or she responds, and then they have to be ducking bullets. I mean, that's crazy, you know, but that's 2016. That's one of the reasons why we want it gone. 2016, get out of here. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. It is, well, my clock says 6:38. We're going to take a, I think we're going to do something here. All right. Can we get some applause?
Good evening, family. This is Oliver Sandelay out of New Orleans, Louisiana, coming to you with another great and informative video. Peace and blessing to all the melanated family. Peace and blessing to all mankind. We're going to talk about the legacy of that bitch Obama, or Barack Obama. What has he done for the melanated family? Not a motherfucking thing. He loved the motherfucking gays and the homosexuals. He passed the bill that they all can get married. He gave Israel over $100 billion, Iran billions of dollars. Him being the first black president, he ain't said nothing about reparations that our ancestors went through and all the bullshit that we did to build this fucked up country. His legacy is zero, far as I'm concerned. He hasn't done a damn thing. He got the most power than anybody in America, and he hasn't done nothing, hasn't said nothing, hasn't put his foot down. But he put his foot down for the homosexuals and the pedophiles. Because if you're a homosexual, you're a pedophile too, far as I'm concerned. And all these other countries that he's giving all these billions of dollars to. Then he signing all these executive orders to lock your ass up in FEMA camps. That's right, family. More black people than got killed in the Obama watch than motherfucking in slavery time, damn near. The brother hasn't done nothing. Really, I don't even want to call him a brother because he got Andadol blood in his system because his mammy was a cracker. Barack Obama hasn't done nothing for the black community of the black race. He went over there in Libya and one of the most prosperous countries in Africa and fucked it up, bummed it up, lying and conniving because Gaddafi wanted to make African money with gold, not fucking weightless paper that you get from a tree. That's right, family. Barack Obama is Satan himself. He is for the establishment. He's working for the demons. He may be a clone or whatever. But this motherfucker haven't done nothing for the black race, family. Not a goddamn thing. And I'm through talking about this coon-ass nigga. Peace and blessing to all the melanated family. Although listening to this video, please subscribe. In the L.
Well, what can you say?
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. We have elected an idiot. For all the insanity and the stunning self-absorption and the bullying and the delusional view of America that would embarrass a high school dropout watching cartoons while strung out on meth, the much more existential threat from the Swiss cheese personality of Donald John Trump roared to the forefront over this weekend past. And that existential threat is simply this. In the complex international relations that, like it or not, keep the world from blowing itself up every afternoon, Trump has just proved he has no earthly clue what the fuck he is doing. Just since last Friday, Donald Trump has given aid and comfort to our Russian enemies who are aiming for nothing short of world prominence with the help of their jackass Trump. He has undermined this nation's status as the only enforcer left on the side of human rights, and he has screwed up, whether inadvertently or as reported Sunday night deliberately, nearly four decades of diplomacy, balanced on a razor's edge with China and Taiwan. And just as that China and Taiwan diplomacy began to stabilize, he went and screwed it up again on Twitter. Good work, moron. You don't have to live next door to the United Nations to understand why talking to the president of Taiwan and making it public and referring to the close economic, political, and security ties between Taiwan and the United States just increased the chances that Trump will get some of us, including his supporters, killed. Since 1979, we have played a silly little childish game with mainland China. If we don't make a big deal about that island of Taiwan, if we don't call it a nation, if we recognize that psychologically Taiwan is to the Chinese what communist Cuba has been to us since 1959, if our diplomats and presidents and dipshits elect like Donald Trump don't rub China's nose in it, the Chinese will not wipe the more or less democracy of Taiwan off the freaking map. It's that simple. The 1,350,000,000 mainland Chinese communists will not turn the 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan into a parking lot. All we have to do is not do exactly what Donald Nitwit Trump did by saying what he did to the Taiwanese president last Friday. But of course, he did it because he thinks he knows better than everybody else about the world when he doesn't know shit. And anyway, what's the fate of 23.5 million Chinese on Taiwan compared to what really matters? The president of Taiwan called me today to wish me congratulations on winning the presidency. Thank you. Interesting how the U.S. sells Taiwan billions of dollars of military equipment, but I should not accept a congratulatory call. Because clearly the point of an incoming presidential administration is to see how many leaders around the world call in to tell him how terrific he is. We now see, 6 weeks out from the inauguration, the outlines of the Trump doctrine. Congratulate Trump! Sunday, a crowded elevator's worth of trumpets pushed a story in the Washington Post that this was all planned. It was a more robust defense of Taiwan, which is, of course, even dumber, especially if the idiot-elect has to publicly disguise his planned robustness as naivete, because, of course, he then gets mad when people call him naive, and so thus he doubles down on the whole thing Sunday night on Twitter. So now not only are the Chinese pissed off, not only is their help in whatever looms next for us in North Korea in jeopardy, and not only is an actual slow growth in the reliability of the relationship between our two countries at risk, but who benefits from uncertainty between the U.S. and China? We don't win from it. The Chinese don't win from it. In whose interest is the new confusion, the new setback, the new ass-hattery from Trump? Russia. Always Russia. Russia. And by the way, guess what flooded out of a WikiLeaks dump Saturday that you probably didn't hear about? 90 gigabytes, 2,420 documents of intelligence related to Germany and the German President Angela Merkel, ahead of Germany's upcoming elections. Germany, which since Trump's election by a minority of our voters, has already taken our place as the leading democracy in the world and the only Western power able or willing to stand up against the passive-aggressive world war that Russia has been waging for several years, now with the aid and comfort of President-elect Donald Bumbling Amateur Putin Puppet fucking Trump. And yes, I said Trump's election has already resulted in Germany taking our place as the leading democracy, the leading enforcer on the side of human rights in the world. And if these fiascos with China and Taiwan and WikiLeaks in Germany are not evidence enough, there was a third Trump diplomatic disaster that might actually have eclipsed the other two. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, the street thug who has had thousands of his citizens murdered by police and vigilantes without trial, or in many cases without even arrest, on the pretext of an anti-drug campaign. Duterte says he too got on the phone with Trump on Friday, and that Trump endorsed the barbarism Duterte has unleashed. I could sense a good rapport, an animated President-elect Trump, and he was wishing me success in my campaign against the drug problem, Duterte said. He understood the way we are handling it. We are many things in this country, but we have never and must never stoop to murder disguised as law and order by a dictator who has compared his own actions to those of Adolf Hitler as if he were complimenting himself. Worst yet, Duterte said this buffoon Trump has invited him to visit New York and Washington, and bluntly, Rodrigo Duterte should not be admitted to this country even in a casket. But don't tell Trump that. He knows everything. If this is how this dense, pea-brained little man is going to run things, if this is how far in over his own fat orange head he's going to be internationally, if this is how he is going to strut as president, a triple-chinned bull in a nuclear China shop, he cannot be allowed to become president. Because after January 20th, if he decides to have a week of prioritizing receiving congratulations for his inaugural and tweeting out his petulance about Chinese taxes, if he can't manage to keep his fucking ego out of these opaque but essential balancing acts, the ones which stitch together the world as it is, he could get us all killed before his next appointment with whoever or whatever colors his goddamned hair. Resist.
I totally agree.
Peace.
Peace. Out. Ladies and gentlemen, Keith Olbermann on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay. All right. I'm going to give another, excuse me, folks. My tongue is twisted. Sometimes I do stutter, but it's all good. Okay. One of the solutions, I think, to Chicago crime, especially crime on the west and south sides of the city, is for the police. I've talked about this yesterday in the show. If you missed that podcast, please go back and listen to it. Okay. One of the solutions that I think that would be good for Chicago, especially in those high crime areas, is for the police to show a big show of force. I think if they show that crime would totally be reduced, because that would be a deterrent. And that's what we're talking about here, folks. We're talking about a deterrent, trying to prevent crimes before they happen. And a big show of force from the Chicago police officers would do that. But that's not happening. Only time you see a big show of force from the Chicago police is after the fact. That means after the murder, the shootings have been committed and everybody's dead. Police are everywhere then, okay? A big show of force. What about a big show of force before the crime is committed? Especially if you know for sure that this is a crime area. I mean, the people on the southwest side of the city of Chicago deserves a police force that's going to protect them. I understand that police officers, their lives are on the line every time they go out to a call. And I do. But they accepted the job. You know, they applied for it. They got it. You know, they know all about the risk. They have a job to do. What can I say? You know, I mean, you can't be a coward. You can't be scared and be a police officer. You know, you have to have some gumption. You know, you have to, your job is to protect people, to keep people alive. You know, so a big show of force on the southwest side of the city of Chicago would be a great deterrent from crime. If the bad guys see a humongous police presence in their crime-ridden neighborhood, they will think before they act. Now, if one of them idiot fools decide they want to shoot a police officer, you know, I mean, that's dumb, because the police officers will shoot back. They will shoot back. But this show is all about making the world a better place and totally, you know, giving out solutions to solving the crime problem in the city of Chicago. The mayor and the aldermen, they always seem as though they're asking for input from the citizens of the city. But yet you'll give them input. They may see it. They may not see it. But you know that it's not going to be acted on. So why would you waste your time? They're going to do what they want to do because they're politicians. They're going to tell us what they want us to know. They're going to tell us what they think we should know, but they're never going to tell us what we need to know. I've said this before, and that's the truth. And that's why I always say, whenever a politician or this police superintendent says something, take it with a grain of salt. They're trying to, you know, I think they're trying to just make the problem sound a little bit less vicious as it seems, but that's not going to work. The crime in Chicago is just pathetic. Especially, I mean, when I heard about the statistics over the Christmas weekend, and now we have the New Year's weekend coming up, how many people are going to get shot then? 60 70 80? And these assholes going to get on television and try to play it all down, which is ridiculous. You can't play that down. A mother's child is shot. You think she wants to hear the superintendent say, you think she wants to hear the superintendent say that it's bad parenting, or that the judicial system is letting the crooks out too early, or that these guys who shot her son was gangbangers? The parents want to see some action done. They want to see a police presence in their communities. They can't afford to leave those communities. They can't afford to move. They are trapped there in a cycle of violence that's all around them. There should be a 24/7 police presence in some of these high crime ridden neighborhoods where you know people are going to get killed. Period. You shouldn't have to be able to make any excuses. You're getting a fucking six-figure salary from the taxpayer. Earn your money. We don't need lip service. Earn your money. And that's what it's all about. Solving crimes. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Happy 2017, everybody. It's going to be a hell of a year. I want to say a little something about Debbie Fisher. Well, her real name is Debbie Fisher, but we all know her as Debbie Reynolds, or we all knew her as Debbie Reynolds. And it's sad that she died from the date of this show. She died yesterday, a day after her daughter died, Carrie Fisher. That is something. That is miraculous. I mean, and her son, Todd Fisher, you might have heard, her son, Todd Fisher, said that all his mother wanted to do hours before her stroke was, all she wanted to do was to be with her daughter, Carrie. Obviously, she loved her daughter. She said if her daughter is not here, she doesn't want to be here. So her son basically said that his mother willed her own death because she wanted to go and be with Carrie. And you know what? Now she is. Debbie Reynolds is somewhere with her daughter, Carrie Fisher, and Debbie Reynolds is happy. She wanted to be with her daughter. She stated it, she said it, and now she's in. Maybe we shouldn't feel sorry for her. Maybe we shouldn't be sad for Debbie Reynolds. She's a mother who wanted to be with her daughter. Her daughter died, some say, of a massive heart attack on a plane a couple of days ago. And then yesterday, Debbie Reynolds died. And they both were entertainers. They both had money. They, you know, the skies were a limit. Homes in Beverly Hills, famous, popular. And, you know, they died within a day of each other. You really can't feel too sad about it because this is what Debbie Reynolds wanted. If you're going to feel sad for anything, for anyone, feel sad for Carrie Fisher because she was diagnosed as a bipolar. There's reports that says she misused drugs. She was substance abuse. And so feel sorry for her. She was only 60 years old. 60. Oh, please. That was too young for her to her to go. It had to be some other underlying circumstances that brought on her death, that brought on that heart attack. But for Debbie, her mother, Debbie Reynolds, her mother, you know, she just, according to her son, Todd Fisher, Debbie Reynolds' son, she told him that she wanted to be with her daughter. And he came out and said in so many words that she willed her death in order to be with her. Debbie Reynolds willed her death, caused a stroke that killed her so she can be with her daughter. And you really can't. And you just know right now, if you think about it, that Carrie and Debbie are together. Carrie Fisher has a new movie coming out. She has a couple of things coming out, but she's dead. She's gone, but she got some stuff coming out. The most notable thing she has coming out is another Star Wars movie for 2017. She's going to be in it. She's going to have a bigger role in the movie. And but she's, you know, she's dead. She's gone. She's passed away. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be a pretty good movie. And I'm not talking about Rogue One, okay? We're talking about a future 2017 Star Wars movie. I mean, they are really making these Star Wars movies. Every time you look around, there's a Star Wars movie, you know, because it's one of the reasons why they continue to make these Star Wars movie, as you probably know, is that they are money makers. People love Star Wars movies. They go to the movies to see Star Wars. And this is a moneymaker for George Lucas and everybody who's a part of the franchise. This is a moneymaker. So people love Star Wars movies. And I want to say my condolences to the rest of the Fisher family, Debbie Reynolds' family, on this. It's going to be something else. You figure, you see yourself as the family. A day or so ago when Carrie Fisher died, they were preparing for her funeral, you know, the mother and Perry, and they were preparing for a future for a funeral, mother and other siblings. And now they got to prepare for another funeral on top of that one. They got to prepare for two funerals, the mother and the daughter. But there's no doubt that these two people are going to be buried side by side of each other. I mean, because they're with each other. Literally, I believe this. In death, they are with each other. And you can't feel too sad about that. You can only be, you know, you can only wish them well for that. So that's astonishing. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me all over the place. And I said before at the beginning of the broadcast that I do applaud Obama for sanctioning Russia for hacking and meddling in America's election. I think that was the right thing to do, but I still say that he has done nothing close to anything for all the 8 years that he's been in office for Americans, the African Americans. I believe that. I mean, I voted for the guy twice, but I do applaud him for this. This may be the legacy he's looking for, because there's no other one. There's no other legacy. We will be right back, folks.
To the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Barack Obama has had a busy first 7 years as president. So in this video, I'm just going to lay out
all the things his administration's been able to accomplish. President Obama kept his biggest campaign promise and ended the Iraq War. And he kept the homeland extremely safe, unlike his predecessor who allowed a massive terrorist attack against both our largest city and our capital. President Obama also prohibited the use of torture, which had been rampant under Bush. He created the New START Treaty with Russia to reduce each country's nuclear weapons arsenal. A year after his inspiring A New Beginning speech in Cairo, young people armed only with smartphones and laptops took to the streets in the Arab Spring uprising in Egypt that quickly spread throughout the region. Obama supported the revolutions by ushering Mubarak out of power and protecting the Libyan people from the genocidal madman Muammar Gaddafi. A similar call for change in Syria turned into a devastating civil war, with Bashar al-Assad committing war crimes against his own people, including using chemical weapons on civilian population centers. But instead of involving the American people in another ground war or bombing the Syrians, Obama used these credible threats of force and tireless diplomatic efforts of John Kerry to convince the Russian-backed Assad to give up his chemical weapons stockpile completely. President Obama authorized numerous covert U.S. special operations missions to rescue American hostages, including the infamous nighttime operation at sea to save Captain Phillips from Somali pirates. When it became clear the American public was uncomfortable with the reach of the NSA, Obama reformed it to more clearly conform to the Constitution. Obama has gradually reduced the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan to around 10,000, officially ending the American-led war in 2014 in favor of an Afghan-led, NATO-supported coalition. He drastically reduced the number of civilian casualties caused by U.S. airstrikes in the Middle East by using a smarter, more accountable targeting and authorization protocol. He also ordered a shift to mostly unmanned aircraft, a strategy that both saved money and removed American airmen from the dangers of the battlefield. In 2011, President Obama ordered SEAL Team 6 to carry out the daring mission that killed Osama bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan. Working through UN Ambassador Susan Rice, the president helped negotiate the peaceful, diplomatic splitting of civil war-torn Sudan into two independent countries. He committed the United States to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals. Through his pivot to Asia, the president reaffirmed America's commitment to ensuring the region stays peaceful and healthy economically. This pivot included more cooperation with emerging powerhouse China on a whole range of issues, while candidly addressing differences on human rights, cybersecurity, and the South China Sea. Key to this pivot is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a 12-country agreement representing nearly 40% of global economic output, to increase American trade with the fastest-growing region in the world, and also to blunt China's desire for a less fair playing field among its neighbors. Obama ended the 50-year embargo of Cuba, normalizing relations with the island nation, reopening the U.S. Embassy in Havana, and visiting the country with his entire family. After Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea from Ukraine, the U.S. used sanctions to punish Russia for violating international law, weakening Russia's economy. Then, after reinforcing Ukraine with arms and financial aid, Obama bolstered NATO's collective defenses and gave a powerful speech in Warsaw's Castle Square on America's unwavering commitment to the security of its NATO allies in Eastern Europe. When Ebola was overwhelming health workers in Africa and threatening to become a pandemic, Obama rapidly deployed American assets to West Africa, including thousands of American military personnel, coordinating a global effort that quickly won the struggle against the outbreak. The president developed a strategy to lead a 65-member coalition to degrade and destroy ISIL, the terrorist group that had gained strength from the chaos of 12 years of war in Iraq and Syria. After years of painstaking work to bring Iran to the negotiating table, the Obama administration, led by Secretary of State John Kerry, reached a deal to stop the Iranians from acquiring a nuclear weapon. This prevented a nuclear arms race in the Middle East and kept America's strongest ally in the region safe. After taking office at the depths of the Great Recession, Obama pushed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act through Congress, which created over 2 million jobs and jump-started an economic recovery that has now produced a record 65 consecutive months of overall job growth, with unemployment steadily falling below 5%. A firm believer in teamwork, he put Vice President Joe Biden in charge of managing the stimulus, which was praised for its extraordinary lack of waste. With millions facing foreclosure and homelessness at the height of the crisis, Obama and the Democratic Congress took measures to help many stay in their homes. And because states were cutting their budgets back, hundreds of thousands of teachers and first responders were about to be fired, but the Recovery Act and other measures stopped this from happening. With General Motors on the verge of collapse, the president made the risky decision to save it, and probably the nation's auto industry as well. That meant 1 million people kept their jobs, and last year, GM finished repaying its loan, returning to its rightful place among the world's leading car companies. Working closely with other world leaders, particularly the European Union, Obama prevented their economies from collapsing too during the economic downturn. He also led the successful effort to get the world's wealthiest countries to create a $100 billion World Bank fund to support developing countries' access to credit during the crisis. After the Bush bank bailout, the Obama administration forced Wall Street to pay all the money it borrowed back, with an additional $30 billion in interest, and then he put in place the strongest Wall Street regulation since the Great Depression, which gave the government a whole host of tools to prevent another Wall Street-caused economic crisis. The Obama Justice Department's investigation of financial crimes resulted in big banks paying more than $200 billion in fines back to the American people. In the ultra-competitive global economy, Obama has been relentless in promoting the effectiveness of the American worker, convincing companies like Apple to bring jobs back to the U.S. Even China's largest manufacturer, Foxconn, will build a factory in Pennsylvania. The president protected consumers from predatory practices like unfair payday loans and credit card deals, and created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which was set up by now Senator Elizabeth Warren. He cut taxes for the bottom 95% of Americans to their lowest levels since the 1950s, increased funding for food stamps by $20 billion to make sure no one in America starves, provided affordable child care to working families, modernized labor standards, and reformed job training programs to make them more relevant to the 21st century economy. With all this, Obama has proven that taking care of the poor and working class doesn't hurt the economy one bit, and today, the stock market is stronger than it's ever been, with the S&P 500 and Dow Jones more than doubling and the NASDAQ tripling since he took office. After the Bush administration's mismanagement ran up the annual budget deficit, President Obama's team has been able to cut it by two-thirds. Largely thanks to Obama's energy policies, the average price for a gallon of gas in America is around $2 now. More than 13 million new jobs have been created during the Obama presidency, with the economy growing nearly 10% overall since he took office. That's double the growth seen by the average country in the rest of the industrialized world. As a candidate for president, Barack Obama promised to reform America's healthcare system. In 2008, that system was broken, with tens of millions of Americans unable to afford expensive private health insurance, a staggering number of whom were simply denied treatment they couldn't pay for and died. With the Affordable Care Act, President Obama and the democratically controlled Congress put an end to all that, and today, just over 2 years after people began signing up for Obamacare, around 20 million people have gained health coverage who didn't have it before. The president ended Bush's restrictions on embryonic stem cell research too, allowing federal funding for these projects to make significant medical advances. He also signed the first comprehensive improvements for the lives of Americans living with paralysis, authorized the FDA to regulate tobacco companies, forced chain restaurants to add calories to their menus, and oversaw the most sweeping food safety legislation in 75 years. Inspired by the Human Genome Project, the Obama administration launched the Brain Initiative to better understand the human brain and to solve the mysteries behind brain disorders like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, and traumatic brain injury. He used the Stimulus Act to invest $18 billion in scientific research and opened up space to the competitive private sector, igniting a now booming private industry. He used $8 billion to expand access to broadband internet for poor and rural families, sped up deployment of a more comprehensive broadband infrastructure for the whole country, supported a free and open internet through net neutrality, greatly increased the government's ability to deal with cyber threats, set up a national strategic computing initiative to maximize the benefits of high-performance computing research, development, and deployment. And he created the White House Science Fair, which he always attends, to encourage kids to focus on the STEM subjects. So for good reason, President Obama is sometimes called the scientist-in-chief, and nowhere is that more appropriate than on energy and the environment. He has doubled spending on clean energy research, created tax incentives to boost adoption of electric cars, doubled the distance gasoline-powered cars will go on a gallon by 2025, partnered with the private sector to improve energy efficiency on a massive scale, and guided a nearly threefold increase in wind power capacity and a 30-fold increase and solar energy capacity. The U.S. government is now investing in research and development for biofuels, offshore wind, wave, and nuclear fusion energy, and its embrace of natural gas has helped cut U.S. dependence on foreign oil to its lowest rate since 1985, putting the country firmly on the path toward energy independence. President Obama set the first ever limits on CO2 emissions from power plants, limited mercury emissions and other toxic air pollutants, and introduced rules to limit methane emissions. And back at the start of his term, when the Deepwater Horizon offshore oil rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico, sending millions of gallons of oil gushing out, Obama's government, in an unprecedented move, made BP pay $20 billion into a fund for victim compensation and environmental cleanup. The administration protected 260 million acres of America's public lands and water, more than any other presidency in history, strengthened the Endangered Species Act, and increased funding for national parks and forests. The president closed a deal with China to limit its carbon emissions for the first time, laying the groundwork for the historic worldwide agreement in Paris to fight climate change. And in a similar agreement, the Brazilians committed to reforesting an area of the Amazon that's roughly the size of Pennsylvania. And Obama made good on his commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement by making a $500 million payment to the Green Climate Fund, the first of more than $3 billion in contributions America will ultimately make to help poor countries deal with climate change. The Obama administration has invested heavily in reforming America's lagging educational performance at the K-12 level. He started off by ending Bush's much-criticized No Child Left Behind law and instead created Race to the Top, which encourages states to come up with the most effective school reforms, and coordinated the states in their creation of higher Common Core standards, so students are better prepared for success in college and the 21st century global economy, where science, math, and computer programming skills are becoming increasingly important. His team also greatly expanded family access to early childhood education, funded the construction of new schools all over the country, expanded K-12 students' access to the internet in their classrooms, signed the post-9/11 GI Bill to improve veterans' access to higher education, expanded the Pell Grants program so more low- and middle-income kids could afford college, enacted reforms so graduates pay lower interest rates on their student loans, protected students from being deceived by for-profits like the University of Phoenix that are often very ineffective, and created a new college rating system that emphasizes value over prestige. President Obama cut maximum drug sentences for current and future prisoners, paving the way for the first drop in the federal prison population in 32 years, and became the first sitting president in American history to visit a federal prison, holding a meeting with six inmates. After several executions were mishandled, Obama ordered a review of the death penalty process. He limited the amount of military-style equipment local police departments could acquire, and encouraged the widespread use of body-worn cameras on police officers, which has allowed for unprecedented officer accountability and, thanks to a now constant stream of videos, has led to a national conversation about excessive use of force, especially against people of color. He signed the Blue Alert Law to provide police officers in the field with access to critical information when their lives are threatened. And after Congress failed to act to prevent gun violence after massacre, Obama used executive orders to promote safer gun technology, improve the background check system in several key areas, and set up a task force to figure out what other measures can be taken to limit gun violence. And when Congress wouldn't act on immigration either, the president concentrated enforcement on those who committed crimes, streamlined the visa process for those who want to come here legally, increased border security to make it much more difficult for people to cross into the United States illegally, and worked hard to lay the political groundwork for comprehensive immigration reform that almost passed, although Republicans in Congress were ultimately able to block it. Throughout his presidency, Obama has put veterans first. The most obvious example is by ending the two wars that had resulted in a tragic number of service members dying and suffering life-altering injuries. But he also decreased homelessness among veterans by 36%, decreased the veteran unemployment rate from a post-9/11 peak of 12% to just over 4% today, increased funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs by 33%, hired more than 1,600 additional mental health professionals, and improved access to VA healthcare, reducing average wait times to 4 days for primary care, 5 days for specialty care, and 3 days for mental health care. On civil rights, President Obama signed and implemented the hate crime.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
All right, once again, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to say happy New Year, everybody, and I hope you had a great Christmas. The George Wilder Jr. Show after tonight, and we got about 10 more minutes to be on the air. We will not be back. I will not be back on the air until 2017. I just got to get 2016 off my tongue, but we will not be back on the air until the year 2017. January 2017. That's got to be exciting, huh? Everybody's going to have a birthday. Somebody's going to love their birthday. And most people aren't going to want to see their birthday, like me, you know, because I'm old as dirt. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it all, folks. And I thank you for being with me. And thank you for listening to the show all 2016. Thank you for all of your accolades, saying good things about the show, your feedback. All of this for 2016. I'm thanking everybody for 2016 who participated in this show. I want to thank all the guests that I've had on this show during the year of 2016. I've had a bunch, and they all brought their own perspective to the show and to what they do. And I always try to have people on the show that it's going to motivate you, going to give you empower you and inspire you, as I've said, educate, you know. So we try to do that on this show. That's all this show is about. It's not always about politics, but because we try to cover anything of importance, anything that we think the public should know. And like I said before, no one is too old to learn. We all learn every day. I learn stuff every day. Sometimes I learn from the guests on the show. I learn from the callers. I learn from the posters. I learn from, if it's good stuff, I'll learn from any source that's providing the information. And I want to thank everybody for participating in and with the George Wilder Jr. Show all 2016. We are getting ready. I am getting ready for spontaneous 2017. And I hope you are too. I hope it'd be a great year, 2017. I mean, 2016 has just been awful when it comes to celebrity deaths. And I'm pretty sure just ordinary people, grassroots people have also died astonishingly this year. So we just got a couple from the date of this show. We have a couple of more days for before 2016 is finally over. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to say once again, I just keep reiterating this because it's coming from my heart. I want to say happy 2017 to everybody out there. And I hope you have a great year. And if you have any New Year's resolutions, I hope they all come true. If they're good resolutions, positive resolutions, something that's going to make your life better, I hope they all come true. And 2016 has just been an awful year for a lot of us. But we hope to make that better in the coming year. So, you know, it's just, I'm going to say goodbye here, folks, because I'm ready to get out of 2016. Okay. I'm ready to get out of it. And like I said before, the show will not be back on until I believe the day after 2016, not necessarily on New Year's Day, but after New Year's Day or the day after New Year's Day, we will be back on the air. Anyway, I mean, just check back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It will be here. It will always be here. Podcasts and everything. Okay, folks. See you in 2017. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for listening and thanks for being a part of the George Wilder Jr. Show. all day, all month, all week, all year. Happy 2017. We will be back in 2017. Bye-bye, everybody.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help us all. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
Happy New Year, everyone. And Happy New Year, everyone. We got to go.